This is Jonathan Strickland from Tech Stuff.
We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. A big warm welcome to my new co-host, Sarah Dowdy. And Sarah just came back from Boston and had an interesting tale to tell.
I did. I was in Boston a little while ago, and I was walking around the North End, kind of on a cannoli tour, I'll be honest. but a plaque caught my attention, and it was commemorating the site where the Sacco and Vanzetti Defense Committee functioned from 1925 to 27. Seems like it was kind of operating as maybe a yoga studio now, judging by the number of people with mats headed in. But it looked like it was the site of an important historical event.
It was, and we've actually gotten a lot of reader requests for the Sacco and Vanzetti trial, so I'm glad we're doing this today. But they were two Italian immigrants accused of murder back in the 1920s. But to give a little background, maybe we should talk about their lives before they got here.
Yeah, Nicola Sacco and Bartolomeo Vanzetti both immigrated in 1908. Sacco was an edge trimmer at a shoe factory in Massachusetts. Vanzetti, a fish peddler in Plymouth. So pretty basic guys.
And they were both involved in a lot of anarchist activities, which is sort of where the trouble starts. They had both written for the Cronaca Sovversiva, sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but it was an Italian anarchist newsletter, and so their names were already on the list of people to watch at the time.
And they both belonged to the Gruppo Autonomo, an anarchist cell in East Boston that was really into the violent overthrow of the government, so probably not the best thing to be involved in.
No, lots of discovered bomb plots with that particular group. So to go back to what they're actually accused of, on April 15th in 1920, these two men were outside a shoe factory and they had the payroll, something about $15,000, and they were both shot and killed by a group of men.
Mm-hmm. And the eyewitnesses say that the robbers looked Italian, and that's definitely where the trouble starts.
So they had, I believe, seen a Buick that the men had gone away in. So the police started with that one particular clue. They were going to look for a Buick, and they found one in a nearby town at a garage. And I think they talked to the mechanic.
Yeah.
and said that, you know, if anyone came to call on it, let them know. So when Sacco and Vanzetti showed up to
carrying their pistols, unfortunately.
Yes. Not so good.
Nothing's working out for these guys.
They showed up to pick up the car, and of course the mechanic gave a call into the police and told Sacco and Vanzetti that they didn't want to pick up the car right then. It had the wrong plates, so they should come back. And when they did return, the police were waiting for them. And they also happened to lie to the police, which later at the trial was used as a consciousness of guilt excuse.
Yeah, over the course of the trial, there were a lot of different stories that came out from both of them. Vanzetti later said he was kind of trying to protect his friends and fellow anarchists, but that's not really going to fly.
In a court of law.
No. But the trial in general ended up being a real mess. Judge Webster Thayer of the Massachusetts Superior Court, who tried the case, here's a little language warning coming up, had already called them anarchist bastards. So his opinion was clearly skewed from the start. And a lot of other problems. A really incompetent lawyer, even though he was very invested in the case, he was just not up to par.
Well, I don't think he was a local, and he wasn't really familiar with how things went in that part of the country.
Yeah.
And the jury was also very, very specially handpicked in a way that wasn't impartial either.
Yeah, and the witnesses were kind of browbeaten. People who sort of knew something about their alibis, the Italian witnesses were especially pressured. It was just all a big mess.
And adding to the confusion, Sacco and Vanzetti didn't speak great English. Yeah. And their interpreter, it's very possible, wasn't even giving them the questions
that really
the
helps,
judge.
Doesn't it?
It does. They weren't getting the right questions, and he may or may not have been relaying the correct answers. So they eventually replaced the first translator with someone else. But when there's a language barrier, that's a big deal.
It is. So Sacco and Vanzetti were found guilty by the jury on July 14th and sentenced to death.
But the trial went on for another, 6 years afterwards?
The debate went on, for sure. People kept on calling for a retrial. And why this case is so famous and why people are still talking about it is the effect after the trial. Intellectuals and leftists really took up the cause of getting these guys a new trial, for one thing because it had been so unfair. But also, a lot of people felt that they'd been tried on their anarchist beliefs, not
exactly
and for the crime.
Well, and some of it didn't even make sense to go to the specifics of the trial. They were talking about identifying these men, you know, as the people who came to commit the murder. And one of their eyewitnesses was someone who originally had said that no, she couldn't tell from where she was who it was because she had seen him from a distance of 60 to 80 feet away and originally said, you know, that no, she couldn't recognize him, but then was giving really detailed descriptions of, say, his hand. And there were other people who, again, at the time said maybe they weren't even there, they weren't looking, or when they saw guns, they'd hidden, and then later said, no, they could identify these men.
Yeah.
But there never was a strong identification. Actually, in the beginning, many of the police officers had said that they thought it was a gang of professional criminals and not, you know, two immigrants who had absolutely nothing on their records other than these anarchist activities.
Yeah. And that actually, you know, the gang of professionals kind of seemed even more plausible when Celestino Medeiros, who was already under a sentence for murder, this is a bit after the trial, actually confessed to the crime, said he did it with the Joe Morelli gang. So, you know, a group of seasoned criminals, not a fishmonger and shoe factory trimmer.
Well, and another thing about the trial, they never even tried to trace where the money would have gone from this robbery. Where did that $15,000 go? Because neither Sacco nor Vanzetti had it in their bank accounts, nor had they change anything about their lifestyles, nor did the people in their lives seem to have any more money. So if we can't identify them and they don't have the money, you know, where is it,
what was
it coming
the point
from?
What happened?
Except the prejudice in the court and the judge who over and over again gave these ridiculous, I mean, you can read his summaries. One of them, I think, at near the end of the court is 25,000 words
wow.
about how what they've done was fair and they don't need a retrial, but it's clearly not even remotely objective if you give it a read.
Yeah. And just to show, you know, how concerned people were, there were demonstrations all around the world after this trial, and especially nearing the execution date, which was a long time after they were tried, 7 years they were in jail. The governor of the state set up an independent advisory committee that had Harvard president, MIT president, a former judge, trying to, you know, decide if the trial had been fair. One good signifier of how concerned people were about whether this trial was fair is the governor actually felt compelled to make an independent advisory committee consisting of Harvard's president, MIT's president, a former judge, to actually go over everything instead of this would be, you know, to decide if they were going to do a retrial or not, or, you know, whether he was going to issue clemency. He decided not to. The advisory committee stood with him. So they were out of luck again.
Well, and when you look at some of the things that happened during the trial, it seems impossible that they didn't have a retrial.
It does.
At one point, I think they had a ballistics expert, or at least an officer of the law, who had prearranged with the prosecutor how he wanted to present the evidence of the gun that Sacco had.
Yeah.
And they arranged it to say the expert couldn't come in and say that it was shot from Sacco's gun because it wasn't. And he said that would be perjury. I can't come into a court of law and say that. So instead, they arranged the language beforehand. So what the prosecutor said and what the expert answered made it sound like
some double negatives going on.
Exactly. And when the court interpreted it to the jury, that, of course, is how they interpreted it. And for some reason, the defense attorney didn't pick up that line of questioning.
Yeah.
And so it was just dropped.
He was pretty hapless, it seemed.
Well, and later when the expert came in and told that this happened, you would think that that would be grounds for a retrial right there.
Yeah. In 1969, a Supreme Court justice, William Douglas, actually wrote that someone reading the courtroom transcript would have difficulty believing that the trial in which it deals took place in the United States. It was just that backward.
Some of it's heartbreaking when you are reading the transcript. I was reading one little excerpt between, I can't remember if it was Sacco or Vanzetti, and the lawyer, and you can tell that he doesn't understand the questions because they're asking him, you know, are you a Bolshevik? And he says he doesn't know what Bolshevism means. He said, are you a Soviet? And no, he doesn't know what Soviet means. And then they said, are you a communist? And he answers that yes, that he'd bought some books on astronomy.
So we know the trial didn't go well. But, you know, do we have any information now that helps us know, did these guys commit the crime?
Because it did become, as you had mentioned, quite the cause célèbre of the day. Their second lawyer had spent quite a bit of money putting out pamphlets and things and very much trying to use the media to their advantage to get a fair trial for these men. So do we think they were innocent men involved in this trial and just condemned before it ever started? Or was there some truth that maybe they had done some things they shouldn't have done?
Well, later FBI ballistics reports kind of suggested that Sacco probably was guilty, Vanzetti probably not. But there's a lot of disagreement on it still. I mean, in part because all the evidence was so shoddy and the witnesses' testimonies are skewed and unreliable because there wasn't a retrial. It's hard to tell even today.
When some of the evidence was messed with, too, I think the gun was put together and taken apart so many different times at some point they weren't sure if it had been damaged beyond belief.
A ballistics report has to be taken with
exactly.
a grain of salt.
And there was a hat that was found at the crime scene that they'd made Sacco try on, and it turned out there was a hole in it, and someone said, oh, it was from a bullet, and then no, actually, the police had actually...
It's very proto-OJ, isn't it?
It is.
And I mean, another thing to keep in mind is just the climate of the country at the time.
Right.
It was not, these guys were Italian immigrants and they were known anarchists. And that was a good step towards being guilty, just to start. It was after World War I, unemployment was really high, the economy was bad, and there was a Red Scare going on, which
right.
is not the Red Scare that we normally think of,
McCarthyism.
It was long before that, kind of started by President Woodrow Wilson's attorney general, Palmer, who had a bomb explode outside of his house and then just kind of went on an anti-communist, anti-anarchist crusade, kind of gunning for a presidential bid himself, a lot of people thought. But he was responsible sort of for heating up the country with all this, you know, red fear.
And you can see some of that in the trial transcripts again, or even from things the judge said. There are a lot of examples talking about war because Sacco and Vanzetti were also draft dodgers, which did not endear them to the jury.
It did not help.
In Massachusetts. And so they were asked several questions, you know, like, do you love your country? And, oh, well, you ran away from your country. You know, would you run away from your wife if she needed you? Into these ridiculous, hyperbolic, just arguments. But the judge was talking about the pure light of truth and elevating them beyond the blindness and patriotism and, in general, inflaming the jury.
Yeah, and just a few years before this crime, there were a lot of mass arrests and deportations due to Palmer. And the creation of the General Intelligence Division, which was actually headed up by J. Edgar Hoover, not a definitely anti-communist there. And, you know, immigration quotas started coming into play.
Right.
So there was a lot of ethnic fear going on, too.
Well, and a lot of people say, and Sacco and Vanzetti later said, that the reason they lied in the beginning was because of fear, because of all these things that were going on. And they had recently had a friend, a fellow anarchist, arrested and put in custody and wasn't allowed to communicate with anyone. And I think he committed suicide.
Yeah, he supposedly jumped off 14th floor of a building.
And that's about the time they had decided maybe they should start getting rid of all of their anarchist pamphlets and such right as they got arrested.
Yeah, and Vanzetti later said that's what he was doing. He was helping friends clear out their anarchist literature, kind of preparing for May Day raids.
And it's been suggested that Sacco and Vanzetti were actually on some sort of list, and that maybe this was just, this particular charge was trumped up to get them out at any cost and to get them deported.
Yeah.
Sacco and Vanzetti were actually executed on August 23rd, 1927, and before they were killed, Sacco gave a quote, "But what good is the evidence and what good is the argument? They're determined to kill us regardless of evidence, of law, of decency, of everything. If they give us a delay tonight, it will only mean that they will kill us next week. Let us finish tonight. I'm weary of waiting 7 years to die when they know all the time they intend to kill us." End quote. So that gives you an idea of what those 7 years of appeals and motions were like for Sacco and Vanzetti when they were sure that they were going to be executed, and they were.
Yeah. 50 years after their death, the Massachusetts governor, Michael Dukakis, issued a proclamation saying that they had not been treated justly and that no stigma should be associated with their names. Kind of a retrial too late, but nevertheless.
But something.
Yeah.
So whether you believe they're innocent or guilty, I think we can say with fairness that their trial should have been redone. And if you'd like to learn more about controversial court cases, please check out the website and the Stuff You Missed in History Class blog at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the Stuff You Missed in History Class blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
To hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV, and be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure. To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee. Sounds perfect.